Welcome to the Brian Kane Peak Performance Podcast. On each and every episode, Brian talks with coaches, athletes, and performers in all arenas who are putting into practice the principles of peak performance that will help you close the gap from where you are to where you want to be, to help you become a master of the mental game, and to help you start dominating the day.
Hey, how you doing? Brian Kane, your peak performance coach here with the Brian Kane Peak Performance Podcast. And today, we've got a guest who brings more energy than most people do in a week. He brings that in a day. We've got Mark Smith. He's the director of recruiting and the offensive analyst for the SMU Mustang football program. Coach Smith, appreciate you making time to sit down and be a guest on our podcast. If you would you please catch our listeners up to speed kind of on your journey in coaching athletics and how you got to be where you are today as a director of recruiting and offensive analyst at SMU?
Well, thank you, Brian. First of all, I'm feeding off the energy right now in a room with you, which I do every time that I'm around you. I'm the energy vampire, so I'm trying to take as much as I can from you so that I can be an example of that. But I appreciate you having me. My background, I grew up in Abilene, Texas, in a West Texas town, and went to Hardin-Simmons University there in Abilene, played college football there at the Division III level, had a fantastic experience, played for a great coach in Jimmy Keeling, really inspired me to become a coach. I wanted to be like him. Coach Keeling and then my high school coach Randy Allen were the two biggest influences in my life in athletics, and I wanted to be like those guys. And so I followed the path towards coaching and education and graduated from Hardin-Simmons. I went to Abilene, there in Abilene. I went to Colleyville Heritage High School, was my first coaching job. I coached freshman football and freshman basketball there at Colleyville Heritage and spent 4 years there. I kind of climbed the ladder in coaching, worked up to a varsity assistant there, left Colleyville Heritage, went to Irving MacArthur High School, where I worked for David Beatty, who is now the head football coach at the University of Kansas. And Coach Beatty really helped shape my coaching career. Learned a lot of valuable lessons from him in the 4 years that I spent in Irving. I left Irving MacArthur and I went to University of Oklahoma, where I worked as a defensive graduate assistant at Oklahoma. And then some great experiences and times there with Coach Stoops and with Coach Venables. Brent Venables was he's been a mentor of mine and still is to this day, and a guy that I stay in close contact with and really feel like he really shaped the coach that I am today is my time with Coach Venables. And then I left Oklahoma, came back to Texas, was the head football coach at L.D. Bell High School here in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, and was at L.D. Bell for 6 years. And loved my time there at L.D. Bell. Of course, that was when I first got to meet Brian Kane, was when I was right there at L.D. Bell, and what a great day that was and the relationship that's built from that. And always felt a calling to get back into college football. Wasn't looking to leave Bell, but anyways, had an opportunity that came open at SMU when Chad Morris got the job here at SMU, and it was a no-brainer. And so we're here at SMU and just really living the dream every day and trying to change this program around, and it's an exciting time to be here.
You know, one of the things that I've heard you talk about before is the importance of a championship culture and what you guys are trying to build here at SMU, and I'm sure you've experienced when you took over at L.D. Bell and other programs. Mm-hmm. If you would, Mark, talk about the importance of culture and success in an athletic program.
Well, you know, the first thing that I think of when in terms of culture is that in coaching is that culture trumps strategy every day. And you have to be able to establish a championship culture within your program, your organization, your business, whatever that is. You've got to establish it. You got to identify, you know, what are the characteristics that you want in a championship culture, and then you've got to model those things, and then you have to work those things every day. Culture is not something that some people believe that culture is something you come in and you change it and then it's done. It's never done. It's an everyday process where you have to defend your culture. You have to work to continue to model exactly what you want. You have to demand it from the people, your players on your team, the people in your organization. And it's something that you have to work for every single day. But culture trumps strategy every day.
You know, here at SMU, talk a little bit about the championship culture that Coach Morris has, you know, established with the players and with the staff here at SMU, and some of the ways that, as a football program, you guys kind of reinforce that culture.
Well, it was It began at when Coach Morris first got here. We began to look at some of the characteristics and things that we wanted in terms of our team to believe in. What were the values? What was the championship culture that we wanted to see? And so we reached out to the players and had the players then give us feedback on what did they think a championship team should do, what should it look like, what should it involve, and things of that nature. And they came back with a very, you know, precise list of things, and those things ended up being the championship culture here at SMU, and it starts with accountability. That was a consistent a thought that each member of our team had. And accountability, it starts with me. And that was something that they had felt was missing in years past here. It felt like that we had to have to be a championship team as a part of our culture. So it started with accountability, and then with energy, with great work ethic was second. You know, we wanted to be accountable for the things that we said we were going to do and do those things with great energy and a great work ethic. And then the next was mental and physical toughness. And we wanted to see that in everything that we did, being at our best and overcoming all obstacles that were thrown our way. The next thing that we came across was family. We really wanted to have an atmosphere where family, where I'm doing everything for you, I know you're doing everything for me, always putting the family first. Next was integrity, doing what we say we're going to do. And then last was a confidence, a belief, and a faith that the process will bring results. We will see the results that we're looking for if we follow through with this process on a daily basis.
You talk about following through with the process and reinforcing a championship culture, and that culture is an everyday process. It's
yes.
not something you come in and change and then it's done. It's kind of that race that has no finish line. What are some strategies that you guys are doing here at SMU, or maybe you did at LD Bell or Oklahoma or other places that you've been, that you think help to strengthen your culture, whether they're traditions or they're team building activities or parts of your process on a weekly basis to help strengthen that culture? What are some of the things that you've
seen?
Well,
I think that, you know, first of all, here at SMU, the circumstances are a little bit different. Being a new staff coming in here and establishing all of these things, the biggest thing that we have to do as a staff and with our players is consistency in addressing the culture and how we're going to get from where we are to where we want to be. And I remember when I went to Oklahoma and I got there, and there was a championship program that had been established. They had been winning before I got there. They were winning after I left. And now looking back at my time there and spending time here trying to figure out what was different. And I always felt like that when players got to Oklahoma, that the culture jumped on their back as soon as they walked in the building. And it was really something that was modeled by everyone that was in the building. And the seniors really took ownership over making sure that the young players, the freshmen, knew exactly what was expected of them to be a part of this program. And I used the example of the culture jumped on their back, but either you're going to embrace this culture that's on my back right now, and I'm going to allow it to be a part of me, and I'm going to do these things as well, or it's going to weigh me down, and I'm not going to be able to make it here. And that's what we're trying to get to at SMU right now, and I think that we just have to continue to be consistent with our approach with this. I really think it takes time. You know, the definition of a process is a gradual change over a period of time, and we're working through that right now, and we see small increments of improvement every day. And over time and over years, then the culture takes effect with everyone that's in the program and in the building. And once you get to that point where, you know, our freshmen are buying in, the sophomores are staying the course, the juniors are seeing the results of those things, and then your seniors are now giving back and training the freshmen, then you've got the full cycle, and your culture is now instilled within your program, and then you're just in defending it every day and making sure that nothing gets in the way of doing what you want to go and accomplish.
I love your definition, Mark, of a process being a gradual change over time.
Right.
And I think that ties back to one of my favorite books that we talk a lot about here on the podcast, which is The Compound Effect,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how those little daily decisions add up over time. What are some of those things that you've seen in your coaching career, either stories or examples or ways that you help to reinforce that importance of the compound effect and staying the course? Because as we know, players want you know, they want it yesterday. And yes. Sometimes they're not patient in the face of adversity, that they think that you come in and you change a little bit of an energy or do something new, and all of a sudden it's going to lead to 9 wins, when really it's a byproduct of staying that course and being consistent. So what are some things that you do to reinforce that compound effect or those daily processes over time?
You know, it's just what you said. It's being consistent with your message. Being consistent with talking about your culture, and we include that. We've got our championship culture and the things we mentioned earlier. We've got graphics created that have those things on it, and they're in every meeting room that we have in the building. They're in every notebook, every handout that we hand to our players. We're constantly putting that in front of them, where we want it to be everywhere they turn in this building. They're seeing that. They're seeing our championship culture in our team room. We've got them, you know, giant on either side of the wall in there, and I think it's the reinforcing of that. We've got our Pony Up Creed, which is, you know, our championship culture characteristics, and we have the players recite those, you know, in each of the meetings that we have. Every Thursday at the end of practice, the entire team recites the Pony Up Creed, which reinforces those championship culture characteristics. I think it's just something that you have to do to be consistent with that. And then the more consistent that you are with your delivery and with your expectation, the more you're going to get out of it. You know, that's with anything that you do. Consistency is the key.
If we can kind of shift gears maybe to the mental game of football. You know, we met 2 summers ago at the quarterback ranch camp, South Lake, Texas. I'm doing a 25-minute talk or so during the rain delay about the mental game or lightning delay. And then you're there afterwards and come up and I think took every book that I had and brought it to your staff, you know, and we're all fired up on the mental game. So whether it was, you know, in your 1 year of kind of doing it on your own at LD Bell or us kind of working it together a little bit more here at SMU, what is the mental game to you as a football coach?
It's everything. I think that's where everything happens. You know, you have to win the game mentally before you can physically, and your focus has to be on the process over the outcome, and teaching your players that so that they don't get caught up in the highs and lows of the game. They're literally playing the game one play at a time, where each individual play is a life of its own. And once you get your players to understand that, and for their mindset to change from focusing on a scoreboard and focusing on the outcome to focusing on the process and the things that I need to do to be the best that I can be, that's where you move into, you know, you move into excellence as far as your performance. And when you're not worried about, you know, what the result is at the end, I'm worried about doing everything that I can do on this particular play to be the very best that I can be. And, you know, that's what intrigued me. I when I first met you those, you know, 2 summers ago, and I remember hearing you talk, I remember seeing the little toilet bowl up on the table with you and about flushing it, and what a great, just, you know, example that was of being able to flush one play and move on to the next. I remember how simple that was, but also how profound that it was, is that we have so many, you know, players and coaches alike that get caught up in the emotion. They don't have the ability to flush what just happened, whether it was good or whether it was bad, and move on to the next play. And, you know, those are the teams that are successful, the ones that have the ability to flush the good and the bad and move on to the next play regardless of the circumstances or anything that's going on, you know, outside, and being able to keep my focus right where it needs to be, which is on the play at hand.
You know, a lot of people talk about playing the game one play at a time. There's a method and a process to actually do that revolves around, you know, taking your breath on a focal point. If you get caught up in a red light or yellow light, having a physical release with a clap of your hands. What is that process of going one play at a time, in your opinion here, of how you actually do that?
Well, it's taking a deep breath, okay? It all starts with a breath, and we teach all of our players and try to reinforce that on a regular basis here, that, you know, that you've got to be in control of yourself before you can be in control of your performance. And the first thing that we want to do to be in control of ourselves is take a deep breath. So we take a deep breath to be in control of myself, and then we focus on what we need to do for that particular play. When that play's over, we have a release, which is, you know, for us here at SMU, which is a clap. We want to hear the guys, you know, we want to see it on tape. We want to hear it if we're in the stadium, that physical clap, that release of letting that play go, taking that deep breath, finding that focal point and then shifting my focus on to the next play. And we play in an offense here where we want to be as fast as we can possibly go, but when we're going fast, we still have to be in control of ourselves. And, you know, we can do all of these things. And the guys here have shown improvement from when we first got here until now. And we're going to continue to work on improving in every area so we can be the very best that we can be. But that's our process, is the breath, the focal point, and then the release every play.
You know, another part of the process that you guys actually use is if you watch a game and the naked eye might not see this, or the casual SMU fan might not see this, but coming out of the tunnel with an axe, and the guy who leads the team on the field, what is that axe?
The axe is a symbol for our team, and it's you know, Coach Morris talks about all the time that we each get one swing a day. And he uses the symbolism of there's a big tree right there in front of us, and we get one swing a day, and I'm going to get warmed up, and I'm going to take the best swing that I can make right there. And then one day to the next, our focus is on hitting the tree in the same spot. And if we keep hitting the tree in the same spot, then we'll see progress. And that's a part of that, you know, the definition of process is that gradual change over a period of time. I've got to hit that tree right in the same spot day after day after day, and eventually that tree will get knocked over. But what I can't do is hit the tree down low one time and then in the middle the next day and then up high the next time and swing halfway one day and come at a downward angle the next. That's that inconsistency that we must avoid. So the axe is that example of us that we have to make the most of our swing every day and keep hitting that tree in the same spot, focus on the process over the outcome, and see the victories as hitting that tree right in the same spot. It may not go down today, but I gave it my best swing and I hit it in the same spot and I saw progress from yesterday. We're looking for that 1% better each and every day, and that axe is our visual representation of what we're trying to do.
You know, Mark, one of the things I also was fired up with is we talk about the three rules of engagement. Anybody that's followed us on the podcast of, you know, varying your energy levels from 3, 5 to 8. We talked about the 30-second drill and then the callback. And the callback being somebody repeating something after you. So if I were to say, don't count the days, the callback would be what?
Make the days count.
If I were to say, be comfortable being what?
Uncomfortable.
That would be an example of a callback. Very nice. Now, you use a callback with your son. Tell us a little bit about how that has grown with that beast, man.
My little boy, Micah, he's 7 years old, and I have, you know, really ever since I met you 2 years ago, I mean, I've always considered myself a high energy, a level 8 guy in most things that I do. And I've really tried to instill these things and the mindset, you know, in my son. He's been my little case study, and really working on his mindset and seeing the positive in everything that's out there. And when other people see negatives, that he sees positives. And we have a daily callback that we do every morning. I get to drive him to school. I work for a great coach who allows me to take my kids to school in the morning before I come to work. And when I get Mike in the car, as we turn the corner and get ready to approach a school building, I'll just scream out in the middle of the car, "Who's got it better than us?" And then he'll just scream emphatically back to me, "Nobody." And then next I say, after "Who's got it better than us?" I say, "We do everything with," and he repeats, "excellence and honor." And then I say, "We treat people with," and he repeats back, "kindness." And then I say, "We don't feel," and he says, "pressured." I said, "We feel," and he says, "privileged." And then I say, "What are we going to do with today?" And he screams out, "Dominate it." And that's for Brian Kane right there, to dominate the day. And I mean, he gets out of the car and he's already got a sweat going on around his forehead. And Lord knows what his teacher thinks when he walks in. But that kid, he does. He's got a smile on his face all the time. And I can see it, just the mental approach that he has when he walks into that school building. I know he affects other people that are around him, and that's what I try to do when I come to work every day. When I go to Starbucks in the morning, I try to make sure the barista has a smile on her face because of something that I said to her during that day. And everything that I do, trying to make the people around me better with my energy level, whether I'm at a 3, 5, or 8, to make sure that they see me operating at a high level. And the callbacks with Micah, I can really see it making a difference in his life, and I know it'll pay dividends in the future for him. And same things we're trying to do with all our players here at SMU.
Love it. I think that's fantastic, using that callback. you know, with not only with your team, you know, but using it in your own house. I think it's just a great way of communication and a great way to build that energy for the day and dominate it. I love it. Mark, any questions? Let me throw this one at you. Any questions that I should have asked you about the mental game or about your career and your knowledge base that I didn't?
You know, I think that you can always talk about maybe things that have worked well for you, that maybe stalled out for you, that haven't worked as well. You know, the process for becoming a great, you know, mental competitor is pretty simple, but there are a lot of obstacles that come in the way of achieving that. And then, you know, when we've run into those here at SMU, and I think that's probably an important thing to discuss, is, you know, how can you identify your obstacles and then overcome those to be able to be the best that you can be. So and for us, and I think that's the biggest part, is identification. You know, that's something that we have to do, and that's part of defending your culture every day. And, you know, it's not something, as you mentioned before, that you come in and you change and then it's done. You know, you have to defend it every day. And, you know, it's like shaving. You know, you miss shaving for one day, you look like a bum. If you quit defending your culture for one day, I mean, you look like a bum. And you have to come out and defend it every single day, identify what the obstacles are, and make sure that you address those and make sure you can move those to the side so you can keep your focus on where it needs to be all the time.
As I'm rubbing my face and feeling like a bum because I haven't shaved in a couple of days.
Well, you look good with a one day right there.
For November, man.
Yeah.
Trying to get a head start on November, you know. But last question for you, Coach. The listeners to this podcast predominantly are going to be, you know, college and high school coaches. There are going to be some athletes. There are going to be some parents. There's going to be some corporate warriors, elite sales athletes on there. If you could remove the skull cap of anyone listening to this interview and plant one seed of success in there that would germinate and would take hold and would help people get closer to living the life that they want to live and being the people that they want to be, regardless of age, regardless of gender or you know, career path, what would that one seed be that you would try to plant for them?
You know, and as you got me talking about my son, Mike, it just got me thinking about that. If I could only plant one seed into him or anybody that's around me, I try to talk to him, and this is the first thing that came to my mind, so I'll share it with you, is that, you know, frustration is the most underproductive emotion that we have. And, you know, there are going to be challenges in your life, challenges in working through the mental game with your team, with your organization, with whoever it is, but just to don't get frustrated. You know, it is the most underproductive emotion that there is. Continue to stick to the process, see your success and the gradual change that you're making, and then make a positive difference in the people around you as you're trying to do the things that you want to go and do. And that, you know, setbacks, you know, a wise man once told me that setbacks are an opportunity for a comeback. And that's exactly what they are. And you're going to encounter obstacles along the way. Don't get frustrated in it. Spend your energy on things that you can do to make a difference and affect the people around you in a positive way. That would be my advice.
Don't get frustrated. Get fascinated. And I'm fascinated with the quality of this interview. I've got about two pages of notes here that I'm going to have to decipher through and use in my write-up of this. So, Mark Smith, thank you so much for your time, your energy, man, and your commitment to excellence. For people that want to get in touch with you or follow some of the things you're putting out on social media, what's the best way for them to follow you?
They can follow me on Twitter, and it is at Coach Mark Smith on Twitter, at Coach Mark Smith. And would love to stay in touch with people that way. We put a lot of things out, a lot of stuff out about the mental game, about our championship culture here at SMU. You can follow me there and just keep up with what we're doing.
Awesome. Mark, thank you so much, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks for listening to the Brian Kane Peak Performance Podcast. Please make sure that you visit briankane.com. That's briankane.com. And sign up for my Monday message, where every Monday I deliver straight to your inbox videos, interviews, articles, tips, techniques, and strategies that you can use to master the mental game. You can also contact me through my website on our Contact Us page and see my calendar of where I'm going to be in the country and when I'm coming to your area so that we can get together and that we can continue to go out there and dominate the day.
The Brian Kane Peak Performance Podcast is part of the Top Coach Network. This is a production of Corn Belt Sports.